This is the Palladian Energy Podcast, a podcast series for energy professionals featuring short, insightful interviews with experts who can shed light on topics that matter to you and your business. We'll cover issues relevant to the upstream, midstream, and downstream sectors. The first series will comprise 10 episodes, each providing valuable information on the topic of digitalization in the oil and gas industry. I'm your host, Elizabeth Corner, Senior Editor at Palladian Publications. Please subscribe to the podcast for free on anchor.fm and rate and review.
Sponsoring this episode of the Palladian Energy Podcast is Prisma Photonics, helping to keep the most critical, large-scale infrastructure up and running. Introducing a quantum leap in pipeline monitoring for smarter, safer, and more efficient operations. Head to prismaphotonics.com to learn more about Prisma Flow, a pipeline monitoring solution that can scale to thousands of kilometers without installing any sensors for leak detection, third-party intrusion, excavations, and more. Prisma Photonics, pipeline response ability at scale.
Welcome to episode 2 of the podcast. In this episode, I'm delighted to be talking to Vicky Knott, CEO and co-founder of the control room software company Crux OCM. Hi, Vicky.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So let's start with the basics. Crux OCM fully automates how control room operators in major oil and gas assets interact with their systems. Vicky and her team, based in Canada and the US, use robotic industrial process automation to engineer solutions to control room problems. And their work aims to solve inefficiencies in the control room, reduce operator fatigue, and generally make things safer all round. So welcome, Vicky. I'm looking forward to talking to you about your vision for the pipeline control rooms of the future. And I guess just as importantly, how we might get there as an industry.
Yes. Excited to chat with you as well.
And now I've heard you speak about control room operators using procedures, checklists, and rules of thumb in their day-to-day operations. So maybe you can tell us what the deal is here. What do those bits mean, procedures, checklists, and rules of thumb? And what could the control room operators be doing instead of those?
Yeah, so I'll dovetail my background into that. So I did train as a control room operator for the world's longest batched oil pipeline. So that's when I got very acquainted with the procedures, checklists, and rules of thumb. So currently, when you're operating a large pipeline system as a control room operator, you're leveraging paper procedures. At your training, you know, it'll take 6 to 12 months to be qualified to operate these systems, which is a great thing. And then, of course, like the tribal knowledge. So the things that people know and that they're, you know, is passed down verbally, like, oh, make sure you always set this pump at this setting, right?
Yes.
So the folks are leveraging that knowledge to be able to operate the assets. And then, so if you're going to start up a pipeline system, you know, you've got your paper procedure, you've got this knowledge, you've got what I call mental hydraulic models, just transient hydraulic models, and you're executing the set point changes, the pump starts, and the pressure set point changes, through the SCADA system to start up or manage the rate, of the pipeline. So that's kind of like a day-to-day of what folks are doing. Obviously, there's going to be downtime when things are running great, but if it's a batched oil pipeline, you're still going to babysit it. So what the folks could be doing instead, because this is already happening, is the phone is ringing because the field's calling. The phone is also ringing because oil scheduling is calling. You know, you've got a supervisor, an engineer looking over your shoulder trying to commission something in the field. So it's, you know, control room operator fatigue is a very big concern in the industry. And it's been addressed through, you know, shift scheduling. It's been addressed through alarm management. However, what the actual workload is and the actual tasks that folks are doing has not been addressed, and that's what we're working towards. So I think of it like, you know, we've got autopilot in planes, right? Like, you still want your pilot, you still need the pilot, but would you feel safe anymore if you were flying from London to Calgary in a commercial plane that didn't have autopilot software? Like, you actually wouldn't. So that's really the safety leap that we're trying to get to. Yeah.
Okay. You talk about human fatigue, and I guess human fatigue then potentially leads to human error. And that human error in pipeline operations is an ongoing concern across the board, particularly in the control room. So how do you tackle that in the control room?
Yes. So you know, I mentioned the stuff that's been done in the past is the alarm management, shift scheduling, all that great stuff, you know, ergonomics, lighting. Control room design is super important. Mm-hmm. Screen design is important. So the additional thing that we're building to help with that is automation of these procedures, checklists, and rules of thumb. So instead of your control room operator executing 100 or 1,000 commands on the SCADA system to start up an asset or over their shift manage max rate of the asset, they can now enter in the target rate and the software will execute that for them. So again, thinking like the autopilot software or like, you know, autonomous driving software, like, you know, using control systems and control theory to be able to really greatly simplify what a control room operator has to do. So instead of them, you know, being sitting there and the phone's ringing and they're trying to get the startup going, they're able to set in a target rate, pipeline starting itself up, they can answer the phone. That's really the differentiator.
Yeah, you can let it drive itself.
Yeah, let it drive itself. It's still, you know, you still need the pilot. The pilot is absolutely mandatory. You know, if something's not going the way it should, you need the pilot to intervene. But should the pilot be holding the controls tight all day long? Probably not.
Yeah. So it's an autopilot type system.
Exactly. Exactly. Yes.
And what do you hear from pipeline companies or oil and gas companies about their willingness to change and adopt automated solutions?
Yeah, so the U.S., they get it, yeah. For sure. So they've been definitely a fantastic early adopter. Mm-hmm. You know, we are public with one customer, if you Google them, that is working quite closely with us. They've been fantastic. So, you know, they understand what we're trying to achieve and why it's increased safety and increased volumetric throughput. That's another one that they're loving as well, because, you know, like anything, when it's automated, it's more efficient because it's repeatable, it's consistent, it's maximizing rates. So they love that. One thing, you know, that's interesting that we'll get questions sometimes from clients that are not as much in the early adopter side of things. Their question will be like, oh, the control room, the engineer specifically, like, oh, the control room guys are going to hate this. And that is not true at all, because the control room guys are so overworked that when we explain to them, like, you know, the goal here is you're still the pilot, right? We just want to make the pilot's job easier. They're like, yes, please make my job easier. So it's quite interesting that engineers assume that the control room operators will hate it. And then the control room operators quite love the concept.
Okay. Yeah, that's interesting. So you're saying to the control room operators, we know you still have the knowledge. We know you still are in control of this situation, but this is actually something that's going to help you and in fact optimize your work.
Yeah. And like, we know that they're the crux of the operation, right? Like, they're the ones hands-on frontline operating these multi-billion dollar assets, and they need and deserve the best tools possible to do that. And that's what we fundamentally believe.
And you mentioned that engineers often kind of push back. Maybe you can address for us briefly the common concerns that a pipeline operator might have about outsourcing for these types of operational systems. I don't know if you've got a list in your head.
Yeah, so interestingly enough, we address a lot of that with our architecture design of the software. So we actually sit on a server inside of their cybersecurity. And then, you know, we're tied directly to their existing SCADA system. And it's also like, you think of like cruise control in your car, as soon as you put the brake on, like cruise control kicks out. We're the same as that too. You know, if the control room operator makes a set point change, software kicks out because it's, you know, it's their system. It's how they want to operate it. But yeah, like those are the typical concerns. It's like, okay, where does it sit with respect to the current control and SCADA infrastructure? You know, we address that by being inside of their system. What do you do if the software is doing something we don't want it to do? Oh, just click the button and it'll kick itself out, right? Like, you're in control. So those are probably the two big ones that folks want to know about. And then of course, because we're architected outside of the existing SCADA system and outside of the existing PLCs, it's impossible for our software to overwrite any of the existing safety constraints, which is another key component as well. So any set point we send, even if it's out, if for some reason it's outside of the SCADA, you know, max level operating pressure, it actually can't execute because its SCADA system already accounts for those issues.
Right. So in no way are you relinquishing control. You're actually still working within the parameters that you yourself would set.
Absolutely. And that's because we'd go, like, if we went straight to the field equipment, then there'd be that risk. But we go through the SCADA system and through the existing, very rigorously tested control system.
Sure. I'm sure that puts a lot of minds at ease.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. And we knew that because coming from the industry, we knew that that was the best way to set it up.
Of course, yeah. You recently wrote an article for World Pipelines magazine arguing the case against promoting your IT guy to head of cybersecurity. Why is this a bad idea, Vicky?
We come from industry, but we're a tech company, right? And so I'm now exposed to like modern software developers. Like our head of engineering is a former Google guy, former machine learning hedge fund startups. Mm-hmm. Like, and you know, it's that someone like that who has the ability to understand and potentially hack your system is the right person who should be advising you on whether or not you have adequate cybersecurity. Someone who's worked in your organization for 20 years, who has comes from the IT team, they've read some articles on honeypots or whatever, and they like, and they understand your IT infrastructure and they understand how outdated it is. But like they don't understand, you know, what these organizations are doing and how they're evolving their hacking tactics. Like it's, I don't think that they're set up to succeed as an IT, as a head of cybersecurity. Like I really think that that needs to be outsourced because they don't even understand what these types of software engineers do day to day. And what their skill sets are. So I find it comical when I see that, and I see it so much that your 20-year IT guy gets promoted to head of cybersecurity. And I think that you're setting this individual up to fail. I think you're setting the organization up to fail. So I'm firm on that one.
Yeah, I've seen you talk about how the industry needs to do much more to prioritize infrastructure upgrades, just like they would do with ESG efforts. Maybe you can talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, so especially with when it comes to the IT infrastructure, right, and what the cybersecurity protocols are and understanding, you know, the different levels of vulnerability. Like there's vulnerability in your PLCs, right? It's not just your network. And so what are you doing there? So I think like, you know, upgrading and understanding your software stacks in and all the way down to the hardware is something that like a single executive inside of these organizations wouldn't have a clue because they've probably been working there for 20 years, right? And they've never even seen what a new tech stack could be. So I think that that's something that does need to be focused on because if you think of it from an ESG perspective, if you're upgrading and keeping your systems modern and current, you're mitigating potential cyber attacks or mitigating leaks from accidents. So like what our software is trying to solve to actually, you know, start ensuring that you're not having these types of leaks, which then impacts your ESG or our types of safety incidents. So I think it's like, you know, just mm-hmm. putting some new sensors in and looking at some ESG data versus actually fundamentally understanding what actually impacts those ESG considerations and understanding that your infrastructure is part of that too, from a safety perspective specifically.
And you'd say that these changes are vital for energy companies and their future success.
Yeah, I think so. Like, because another big consideration that that folks forget about is talent, mm-hmm. talent shortages, right? And differences in talent, right? A millennial control room operator is going to look at that SCADA system completely different than a baby boomer
yeah.
operator, right? And plus, they don't want to be pushing buttons all day. Like, that's not what millennials and Gen Zs want to do. So we need to be adapting the systems to the workers, not trying to make the workers adapt to the systems, especially if we want to retain talent in this industry, which is becoming extremely, extremely difficult.
Yeah, a massive issue that we often cover in our magazines. And I think it's about the attitudes needing to change and changing the way you work, changing the way whole systems are set up in order to better bring about change and moving forward to the future.
And it can all be done one small step at a time.
Absolutely. And is that kind of the main point that you'd like people to take away from our conversation today, that it doesn't need to be a daunting change?
Yeah, I think that that's the thing too, is like, as I've seen like digital transformation efforts where like, you know, you bring in giant cloud provider and they want to change everything and they don't understand fundamentally the business. It's like, you know, there's certain things, you know, maybe PLCs need to be upgraded or whatever, but like the whole thing doesn't need to be upgraded tomorrow. Like make it a 5-year plan, right? Like look at what are the high value things, like by implementing a new software solution or a new tech solution, like for us, for example, what is the ROI on that? And then how does that make everything safer and better, faster, right? So I know there's lots of talk about that, like doing the quick wins, but like really understanding that a quick win is not a whole new cloud provider, right? Like a quick win could be something significantly smaller than that, which, you know, actually makes quite a big impact.
Yeah, fantastic. Thank you, Vicky. Thank you so much for talking to us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Super fun.
So that was the one and only Vicky Knott, CEO and co-founder of Crux OCM. And today she offered us her special brand of innovation to advance the future of autonomous control rooms. World Pipelines helps oil and gas pipeline professionals stay informed about the midstream sector, offering technical articles, regional briefings, project and contract news, and think pieces on pipelines all over the world. Register to receive a print or digital copy at worldpipelines.com and search World Pipelines on LinkedIn to join our community. Thanks for listening to the Palladian Energy Podcast. Subscribe for free on anchor.fm. If you have enjoyed this episode, please rate and review and forward to a friend or colleague.